This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on The Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Along with Dr. Mike O'Neill, I am Mike Russell. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Doc, this has been a week we're talking about Obamacare. There's been talk of taxes. The IRS is in a lot of hot water. This has been an interesting week politically on both sides of the aisle. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty excited. We have a single guest this week. You know, we like to keep them guessing.
We do. You know? His name is Ed Kleinbard. Until recently, he was chief of staff of the United States Congress Joint Committee on Taxation.
Welcome. Whoa. Wait a second now. Hold on a second. Okay. I want to say that again because this is important to everybody get this here. Chief of Staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation. And now he's a professor of law at the University of the University of Southern California. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
That sounds to me like you were inside the room when a lot of tax issues got fleshed out. What exactly did that committee do?
Sure, let me explain, and just to clarify for everyone, I finished up with my work with the JCT in 2009, so I've been a proud resident of California for over 3 years now, but an awful lot did happen during my time there, and obviously it remains a very busy place. So the Joint Committee on Taxation is a committee that cuts across both the House and the Senate. The Joint Committee itself doesn't do very much, but it exists principally to employ a staff. And that staff, the staff of the Joint Committee on Taxation, is the nonpartisan tax resource to Congress. And the JCT staff has over 40 professionals, roughly half lawyers, half economists. And they do sort of two fundamental tasks. They project the revenue consequences of any proposed tax legislation. How much more money will it raise for the government? How much less money will it raise for the government compared to doing nothing? They help draft the legislation prepare reports for the tax writing committees to help them in their work.
And I think the key thing I heard there, you said, this is in contrast to most committee staffs where you have majority staff and minority staff, this is sort of nonpartisan, and that to me is like, yes. So there are other places in Congress that have that, where they essentially want technical people to provide unbiased technical advice. Is that a fair statement?
It is. It's a completely nonpartisan staff, which means in practice that the JCT staff are sort of the easiest dogs in the room to kick. Because they're not part of a team. The better known organization is the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO.
That's actually the word I was reaching for, but couldn't retrieve. Which I think follows the same bill. They're basically a intellectual resource for Congress. I want to move us to really current issues. Within the last day or so, we've been hearing a lot of stories about Apple, the largest capitalized corporation in America, very profitable, paid no taxes. And I think last year it was General Electric, similar profile, no taxes. The question to you how did that happen? And was that intentional?
Well, I guess the question is intentional on whose part. Certainly intentional on the part of Apple to create a marvelous stream of what I call stateless income, income that is taxed nowhere in the world and that just sort of floats in the middle of the ocean. The basic point in common in all these stories, whether it's Google and its extraordinarily low tax rate or Apple and so on, is that in every case these stories relate to the international income of multinational firms. What firms have done very successfully is to create structures whereby, in a typical case, their value drivers, which are their intangible assets, are held, allegedly or purportedly held and owned by an offshore affiliate, which then gets compensated by all the other members of the group in some fashion for the use of those intangibles. So in Apple's case, the non-Americas, the intangibles, that is the rights to the commercial exploitation of everything that makes Apple special outside the Americas, was owned and still is owned by an Irish company that in turn says that it's not actually an Irish taxpayer and just floats aimlessly in the ocean, collecting tens of billions of dollars a year in revenue and paying essentially no tax.
Now, what I think would surprise most people when they hear this, they didn't apparently do anything at all illegal, did they?
Well, I find it a little bit awkward to use words like legal and illegal when dealing with corporate income tax. People, when we file our individual returns, we try to get everything right. We lick the envelope. We mail it in. Corporations have a tremendously complex tax returns. You could measure the size of their return in linear feet if you were to stack up all the papers. And major corporations are audited by the IRS and by other tax authorities essentially on a continuous basis. So I don't want to say that their tax returns as they file them are just an opening bid. That's a little too cavalier. But there are a wide range of interpretive questions, and there are therefore negotiations and usually compromises and every now and then a big case where, you know, the IRS sues a corporation and say you didn't pay what we think is the right amount. So I think legal and illegal kind of gets people's backs up in a way that we don't need to say that what Apple did was aggressive within sort of the constraints of what I would have advised back in the old days when I was in private practice, a multinational firm to do. It was at the aggressive end of a spectrum. But it certainly was not in blatant violation of any law.
A real quick answer, and then we'll go to break here. I think the lesson a lot of people would want to take this, the really isn't that Apple's a villain here, but they're playing legally within a very complicated system that appears to be missing something. Fair statement?
The international system is fundamentally broken, and the corporate tax system of the United States itself needs fundamentally to be revisited. The rate is too high, and at the same time, we're collecting actually less than nothing. We're subsidizing the international operations of big U.S. multinationals.
Ed Kleinbart, he was a former member of the U.S. Congress Joint Committee on Taxation, is joining us. So essentially what we're saying is that Apple was playing by the rules. They were playing the game and essentially winning.
Exactly right.
Yeah,
yes.
And we're going to see. I want to look into, Dr. O'Neill, I want to look into how much. Are we overtaxed? Are we undertaxed? Where do we fall in there? More coming up next on The Think Tank.
You're listening to The Think Tank on The Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Mike Russell, along with Dr. Mike O'Neill, our very special guest, Ed Kleinbart, a former member of he was the chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation. And we're talking about tax, and we're talking about taxes for all of us out there that are screaming with our torches and our pitchforks about, we're taxed too much, and these evil corporations, they're not paying their fair share. We hear it from both sides of the aisle. We're not taxed enough. Sometimes they say we're taxed too much. Where do we stand there?
Well, I'd like to ask Ed a question about that. I know you have written papers on this. How heavily are we taxed in comparison to comparable countries?
Well, you know, look, that's a great question, and it's a really important question because citizens in the United States need to get a little bit of grip on reality. There's an organization called the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's the trade association for the major countries around the world.
So, and basically, OECD, just so the listener will know, those are the countries like us. This is developed.
Yes.
This is Western Europe,
yes.
Japan, possibly South Korea, Canada. right? Countries
exactly,
like us.
And a couple of outliers like Turkey, just to be nice. But there's about 31 member states
it's,
in the OECD.
It's the group of countries that it's reasonable to compare ourselves to.
Exactly. Every comparable country is in the OECD. And one of the great things the OECD does is collect great data and produce useful comparables across countries. And I think it will come as a real shock to Americans to learn that in 2012, of those 31 countries, the United States, as a percentage of GDP, including the federal taxes, state taxes, and local taxes, as a percentage of our GDP, we were the
lowest. And let me just step in for just a second to define, if I could define GDP, that's maybe a technical term to some. That's gross domestic product. It means the total amount of goods and services that we produce. It's, in effect, our annual wealth production.
Exactly.
So it's a good measure. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
No problems. So as a percentage of GDP, which is the way you need to compare because countries obviously are very different size, the U.S. is the lowest taxed country in the OECD in 2012. In other years, we're maybe third from the bottom or fourth from the bottom, but we're always at the bottom. 2012, we were absolute bottom, the lowest taxed country in the OECD as a percentage of our wealth production for the year.
I think most people would find that shocking. Do you have any insight? Because I think if we were to ask people how heavily are we taxed relative to other, you'd get a very strong reaction in this country. Oh, we're way, way overtaxed.
I agree with that. There have been a lot of surveys done, and one of the things you learn from working with the surveys is that you can find any answer you want in the survey data. Not only are people very susceptible to how questions are phrased, but they contradict themselves, you know, even within the same survey. So most people feel, if you ask them whether they're undertaxed or overtaxed, they'll tell you that they're overtaxed.
I think perhaps, and I wonder if you'd react to this, perhaps some of the reason is that we have marginal stated rates, the official rates, that are a lot higher than the rates we actually pay.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it. But I also think that a large part of it is that we collect more of the taxes that we do collect. We collect more through the personal income tax than other countries do.
And the personal income tax is very visible.
Exactly. You know, you're punishing yourself. You're punishing yourself. Every year, you have to assess tax against yourself. That's what it literally means when you file a tax return. Most countries rely and have income taxes. They tend to be simpler. They also have higher rates lower down the income level. You know, we hit our top rate at $450,000 a year. Most European countries, you hit the top rate at $60,000 or $70,000 or $80,000.
So in those other countries, middle class or upper middle class people are paying much higher rates.
Much higher. And in addition, every other country in the OECD has a national sales tax, technically called a value-added tax, a VAT, but for our purposes, identical to a national sales tax. And that brings in a lot of revenue. And unlike sales taxes in the United States, the VAT is baked into price.
So you don't see. So they tax more stuff on an invisible level. One thing before
you said VAT, value-added tax.
Yeah, which is in effect a national sales tax.
Okay.
But what I want to, before we break again, I'd like, if you would, because I know you've written extensively about this, would you explain to us what a tax expenditure is and how that fits into this picture?
Yeah, you know, the United States has, as you were saying a moment ago, Mike, high nominal rates, especially for upper-middle-income and affluent Americans, has high nominal rates. But at the same time, we have a tremendous amount of spending programs, of givebacks of that tax that are baked into the tax code itself. So instead of showing that we've raised a lot of revenue and then showing the spending programs by which we're spending that money, the way we keep our books in the United States, we short-circuit that and just show lower tax revenues. And that's another reason why people can feel that they have a heavy tax burden, even if the total collections don't seem so high. And the example of that would be home mortgage interest deduction. home mortgage interest deduction is a subsidy program that we run, that the government runs to reduce the cost of owning a home. It's a subsidy program.
And as it works out, the wealthier you are, the bigger the subsidy you get.
Exactly, because you can have up to $1.1 million of mortgages that qualify for the home mortgage interest deduction. It turns out that if you're lower middle class or just getting by, you typically don't have a $1 million mortgage. So the wealthier you are, the larger your mortgage, and the higher the tax bracket that you're in. And the value of a deduction, the value of getting a $100 expense against your income for income tax purposes, is determined by the tax you save, and the tax you save is determined by that marginal rate of the tax rate on that last dollar of income. So if you're in the top bracket at 39.6%, a $100 deduction is worth $39.60 in your pocket. If you're in the 25% bracket, it's only worth $25. So these kinds of subsidy programs that we bake into the tax code are truly perverse. They're upside-down subsidies. The more affluent you are, the larger subsidy you get.
All right, Ed, I'm going to keep you on through the break here. I want to get into Obamacare when we get back. I want to look at its impact it's going to have on the deficit and any type of remedies or solutions that we're looking for. Stick with us if you could. Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, you're in the Think Tank.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, a single guest today, Ed Kleinbard joins us. He was the former chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation. We've gone after corporate taxes. We've talked about how heavily are we taxed, really in proportion to the rest of the world, and we want to look into Obamacare, if we
could.
Well,
Obamacare has been much discussed. We're not going to relitigate whether or not it's a good idea or a bad idea. But since we have a budget expert with us, I would like to ask him what impact you think Obamacare is likely to have on the federal budget and the deficit, both short-term and long-term.
Well, this is obviously a very important part of the Affordable Care Act when it was debated and when it was enacted. And there are so two halves to the answer. It will increase federal spending on health care because under the Affordable Care Act, 30 million Americans who today don't have health insurance will have health insurance and will get that with the help of government subsidies to make it affordable to them. So we're going to be spending more. But what people like to forget is the Affordable Care Act also added new taxes to pay for all that. So the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, which is in charge of summing everything up, my old staff from before my current academic work at the JCT was responsible for the tax side. CBO is responsible for the spending side and for putting the package together for Congress. And the CBO analysis was that the Affordable Care Act net, when you included the tax revenues that it was raising, was going to marginally reduce the deficit.
Okay, so it's a minor reduction in the deficit net of all taxes and expenditures.
Right, because it added new taxes to pay for the new spending.
Okay, I want to move on to you've been at the table when a lot of this stuff is. You've certainly been an educated watcher of all this, and I'd like to ask you what kind of fixes would you propose to the tax system to deal with, among other things, but not limited to, the news of highly profitable corporation like Apple paying no taxes? And I would add to that, in the process of doing that, undermining public confidence in the equity of an overall system.
I think that confidence point is a very important one, one that has not been emphasized enough in the debate about the Apples and the Googles and so on. In answering the question, you need to divide your thinking into two buckets, maybe. One is corporate or business tax reform, and the other is individual. On the corporate side, we have a big problem, which is, again, I'm very much a proponent of benchmarking the United States against world norms. And when you do that, the U.S. corporate tax rate is way out of whack at 35%.
I mean, and you're talking not the amount of taxes, but the nominal rate.
The nominal rate, exactly right. And the statutory rate, the headline rate of 35% is way out of whack.
What people say they pay or think they pay often.
Right. For corporate now. We're talking corporate. So the norm, you know, what would put us sort of, you know, right where we should be, which is yet in the middle of the pack, a little bit lower maybe than the middle of the pack, would be a corporate tax rate in the neighborhood of 25%. Now,
but are you talking about reducing the total amount the corporations pay? Or are you talking about reducing the nominal rate and also eliminating some deductions or evasions?
Exactly, the latter. So the nominal rate has to come down because that does affect corporate decision-making at the margin. The economists like to emphasize sort of the marginal analysis.
Which marginal, meaning the next dollar you earn gets taxed at that rate.
And so the kind of number that we need is a number like 25% rather than 35%. That's very expensive. We can't afford to simply say, have a nice day to America's corporations and give away what would be about $1 trillion over 10 years of additional revenue. So you would couple a lower rate with taking back all these crazy sub-business subsidies that are baked into the tax code, these tax deductions and credits.
Explain what some of those are. That's what people often refer to as loopholes. What kinds of things are involved in that?
Well, for example, if you build a building, you don't, and you incur a cost of $10 million to build a building. You don't deduct that $10 million. That's an investment that you've made in the building. You recover your investment for tax purposes through depreciation, through saying that every year the building has some wear and tear, and so I deduct a fraction of my investment every year, and that way I'm matching up my recovery of the investment I've made against the income from the asset that I've created.
So you do get to deduct it, you just don't get to deduct it all at once.
Right, because I'm matching the income that I'm creating from the investment I've made with the recovery of that investment.
But if it's a piece of real estate, you may be in effect taking deductions or depreciation, which is really pieced out deductions on something that's actually going up in value rather than down.
True enough. And that is a really fundamental problem with our tax code, that we look at investments without revaluing them. But I was driving at a slightly different example, which is that, for example, if you go in the other direction, if you drill a hole in the ground to create an oil or gas well, you're allowed to deduct that cost right away. I mean, it's the same kind of idea. It's an investment. It's just pointing in a different direction. It's going down instead of up. And that you're allowed to expense right away would be one example. That depreciation that I just described, in many cases, is you're permitted to write off the asset more quickly than it really is depreciating in an economic sense. That's called accelerated depreciation, and that would
so
be another.
You're getting the benefit quicker than your asset is really going
exactly
down.
Exactly.
So in effect, it's a tax subsidy.
Right. And you know, there are many other examples along these lines, and they add up to a large amount of money. And of course, to me, there's a tremendous irony at work. Because we're very proud of the fact that this is a free market economy, that, you know, that we're the freest, most capitalist country in the world, and yet we have all of this government intervention in this private economy, and it turns out that we love that, as long as we're the beneficiaries of it. So, you know, we don't have very principled objections to government subsidies, as long as we're the beneficiary of those subsidies. You know, the alternative energy gets subsidies. You know, the hydrocarbons gets the subsidy in the form of the.
But I think of every one of these, and I could think of what the industry argument would be. In the case of oil drilling, it would be, well, don't we want to be energy independent? Isn't that a good thing?
Well, and in every case, the answer is the same, which is that if you're going to rely on markets to allocate the production of goods and services in a country, which is our fundamental idea, that the market price is a signal to participants in the country, sorry, to participants in the economy, to produce more, to buy less, whatever, depending on the price. If we're going to take the idea of a market economy seriously, then you don't screw around with the market.
And that's what we're doing, is what you're saying.
And we're doing that to a very significant extent. And, I would drastically cut back on those kinds of hidden subsidies. And then I would look at the international side. And because on the international side, a case like Apple demonstrates that although there are a lot of different competing claims about what the international tax system should be, there's no parallel universe that has ever been dreamt of, constructed, or that could ever exist in which there could be a parallel Earth in which there would be a tax system under which billions of dollars of income are taxed nowhere in the world.
Now,
we just know that to be wrong.
Ed, I have a real quick question. It's a yes or no. Is there any hope for tax reform in this country?
there is a remote chance, in my view, and I've thought about this a lot. I believe there's a remote chance of a narrow bill of a business tax legislation in 2014.
All right. Well, Ed Kleinenberg, thank you. Kleinbard, I apologize. Former chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation. He's now a professor of law over there at the University of Southern California. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, when we come back, Dr. O'Neill and I are going to attempt to make sense of the tax code line by line. When we come back, it's the Think Tank.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
All right, Dr. Mike O'Neill is here. You can find him at mikeoneill.org for articles, blogs, writings, other useful types of information. You can also get him on his other job there, O'NeillResearch.com. It contains information about the day job of this guy over here, public opinion and marketing research. We have just taken in a lot there with taxes. We spoke to a very intelligent man, a man obviously with the right resume, the former chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation. I don't know how that fits on one business card, but they might double line that sucker. Anyway, we started corporate taxes, and then we talked about how heavily we're taxed. What did you take from all
that?
One
of my takeaways was something that I suspect most people will not want to hear, and their first reaction will not be to believe it. And that is, compared to every other country in the world like us, we are actually taxed less. And I've thought about this.
Is that a good thing, though? I don't understand why, if I say, this country taxes at 50%, that we say, we should tax at 50%. Why is that?
Well, lower taxes, if there were no other consequences, are always good. I'll go with that. But it's a question of what we're able to provide.
Okay.
For example, I mean, the one of the big things is health care. Almost all of these other countries provide health care as basically a civic right. And up until this point, we haven't. Obamacare gets us closer to that by a substantial increment. And that's a fair question. But I'm just as a matter of fact, whether you think there are those I'm sure who will think that's a fabulous thing. And if we think only of taxes and not the benefits, it is a good thing. But it is, I think, a shocking thing. I think most people would not believe that that's the case. And I've thought about it as somebody who does opinion research for a living. How could most people think, if you were to ask them, they'd say, well, we're amongst the highest taxes, but we're really the lowest. And what is the reason? I think it's a couple of things. One is our stated rates, our marginal rates are stated very high. The top rate is 39.6%. First of all, as Ed pointed out, in the U.S., you don't get to that rate until you're at a very high level. Mm-hmm. At most other countries, you cap out at a much lower level of upper middle class. But the other thing about it where we're different from other countries, we got very high stated rates, but then we give out lots and lots and lots of deductions for things. Some people get massive deductions. Some people get more modest deductions. In fact, the higher the income, not only the bigger deduction, but the bigger proportionate deductions.
That's relative to the income, though, right?
But it's more than that. If you own a home, for example, the wealthier not only get a bigger deduction for a bigger mortgage, it's bigger relative to their income. And they're paying at a higher rate, so the benefits of that is higher. But everybody gets something, and that's why it's very difficult to go and try to do an overall fix to the system where we might just say, okay, income is income.
Like a flat tax.
Well, there's two issues with flat tax. Okay. One is it flat? And two is it just we're taxing income? You could have a flatter tax and just tax income at a much lower level. Wouldn't have to be completely flat. We could say maybe some guy making 25 grand a year should pay a little bit lower percentage than the billionaire. So flat versus flatter, that's one question. But the question is whether or not you're given also the more give, every single give back you get comes out somewhere. So if we're given a lot of stuff back in order for the government to get the money it needs at whatever level we decide is appropriate, that means the stated rates have got to be higher. And the incremental rates at what you pay on that last dollar, which is what the dollar that you're going to make your decisions on, if we're given a lot of stuff back. So right now, what the golden things that people don't want it to, well, I love my, I, you know, I don't want deductions and all that. I don't want all these, you know, loopholes, but I want my home mortgage deduction. I want my deduction for health care and I want my deduction for charity. Those happen to be the biggest. It turns out that those deductions do far proportionally more for the wealthy than they do for the middle class.
Okay, no, he was actually talking about expenditures quite a bit. What
in tax
expenditures? He was explaining tax expenditures. Let me tell you, he's definitely above my IQ level. So try to bring that home.
Let me give you a story. Let's say the United States Congress were to pass a law and say, you know, Mike O'Neill, you're such a fine fellow. We're going to appropriate $100,000 to you.
Okay? Oh, very nice.
That
good
would
for
be
you.
That would be not so good for the budget because that's spending, right?
Right.
So we would all argue that something that narrowly focused, that's not a good thing. But let's suppose they were to narrowly construct something so that it only applied to me, and Mike O'Neill's not going to get expenditure of $100,000, but instead Mike O'Neill is going to have $100,000 lopped off his tax bill. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now the Congress is reducing taxes. Now what's the impact of that on me? It's exactly the same. And that's what a tax expenditure is.
Okay.
A tax expenditure is a change in the law that allows some people to pay less taxes. And you know what? It's zero sum. If some people pay less taxes and you still have to raise the same amount of money, then everybody else ends up paying more. But rhetorically, it's different. Rhetorically, the person who gives a deduction to some people and they get their taxes reduced, they can say, well, we're reducing taxes, not that we're giving out money. But the functional equivalent of those two, either way, I end up with an extra $100,000 in my pocket.
Now, and that's well stated. I think a lot of us, it brings it home for a lot of us. I want to get into your wheelhouse real quick. I want to get to public opinion because we touched on that earlier in the show. We talked about the confidence. You talked about the confidence in Apple. We used Apple as an example, or GE or Google, whoever it is. Talk about the confidence. I think that the confidence, and tell me if I'm wrong, I think the confidence is in corporations. I don't think there's a lot of confidence in the government's way of spending the money that comes in. And I'll use an example here locally in Phoenix. There was some graffiti on the side of a new building. Mm-hmm. And the spokesperson came out and said, that's going to cost us $10,000 to fix.
Yep.
You give me $100 and 10 gallons of paint, I'll get that thing done in a day.
I don't know.
It's things like that we see, and then that's on a micro level. We take them to a macro level federally, and we think, "What? Oh man, these guys? Are you kidding?"
Well, I made two phone calls yesterday. Let me give you the other side of that.
Good.
Okay,
right.
One of them was to a large bank in town. Mm-hmm. I won't say which one, but I'll say you can see their logo on one of the biggest buildings in town here. Okay.
All right.
And there was something on their website that it didn't say. That it said you could download a year's worth of data. Well, it didn't. Okay. Well, I got put on hold for 30 minutes. I had to identify myself six different ways to Sunday. And then
for your security.
Yeah. And by the way, that isn't true. That's for their protection because what it says is they don't trust their. And before they even found out whether I was calling to find out what branch hours are, I had to identify
myself.
Guilty
before proven
ways.
Innocent. Yes.
And then I ultimately got told, well, that's another department and they're closed and you can call back tomorrow and they can maybe help you. Okay. The other call I made was there was a little ruckus out at the end of my driveway, and I heard somebody screaming about I've got a gun.
Okay.
I called 911. They didn't ask me to identify myself or anything else, and they had a police car out there in less than 2 minutes. So, so I think sometimes government takes an unfair hit. I mean, there are there are cases where you could
on how much it costs to get that police officer to you as well.
That's so another matter. We can talk about that. That's expensive.
But you see what I'm saying.
I think sometimes government takes an unfair hit because we all expect it to be perfect, but we don't agree on what it is always that we want government to do and government not to do. I do think that's part of it. I do think what you can trust corporations to do is to act in their own interest.
Absolutely.
And in the case of Apple, I think if you look at this case, the wrong way to analyze it is to say, oh, Apple, how evil. They avoided all their taxes. I don't look at that. I said, you know, I think their finance department would have been guilty of malfeasance if they didn't try to maximize their deal. But where the problem is when you have tax law that's written in a way that not only Apple, but God knows how many other hundreds or thousands of profitable companies are not paying any taxes or paying very low tax. It's not the zero that always bothers you. If it's very, very low in relationship to income, when we're looking at our tax forms and that marginal rate is 39.6%,
I think Ireland's is 15.
Ireland, well, again, you'll notice one of the other things we learned today. We have very, very high stated rates.
Stated rates, right.
But our actual rates are way, way lower. And that's some of it. We think we're paying way high rates, but they're really a lot lower. And the only way you bring those two together is to tax more of the full, you know, stop giving us exemptions for everything and take those rates way down.
Special thanks to Ed Kleinbart for joining us today. Next week on the show, our guest is former Supreme Court law clerk and ASU law dean, Paul Bender. He's going to provide all things legal for us, and a lot of stuff coming up with the Supreme Court. Thanks so much for being with us this week. Mike Russell, Dr. Mike O'Neill, it's been The Think Tank.